Welcome to the Oh For Food's Sake podcast, where we unwrap the joys and struggles of working in the food industry so you can thrive in what you do best while sustaining a rewarding and fulfilling career or business. We are your hosts, Lucy Wager, food industry consultant,
and Amy Wilkinson, food industry coach. We've worked in the food industry for the last 20 years, and we're here to share with you the benefit of our hindsight. Our podcast is for you to find new ways to cope with the daily struggles, but mostly to inspire you to work on what's not working to ultimately improve your career or business long term. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Oh For Food's Sake. Today, we have an extra special guest. I know we always say an extra special guest, but Donna Ward Higgs, who is the founder of Learning Partner Solutions, is a very special guest to me. I met Donna 2.5-ish years ago. We did a training course on how to market our coaching businesses together. And you know, when you meet someone and you just instantly click, that was me and Donna. And over the last 2.5 years, we've become really good friends. She's also helped me with my business. If you've been on one of my training courses, probably Donna has been behind the scenes at some point, because she's really helped me take the leap from being a, you know, somebody working in the food industry, being a one-to-one coach, and then actually doing running training courses and the learning and development side of things. She's got a wealth of experience in that area, and she's helped me along the way. So she's a really, really special person, and I really wanted to get her on the podcast to talk to us about team development, personality profiling, and really why using things like profiling tools can really help teams come together. Because this is the bit where I always go to Donna, can you help me with this bit? Because I don't really know how to do this bit. So welcome, Donna.
Hi, Donna.
Hello.
So lovely to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here.
Donna, start by telling us a little bit about your background and what you do and, you know, how you got to doing what you're doing today.
So I had quite a squiggly career. I started off in retail management, did that for about 12, 13 years with a variety of really well-known high street brands. Was really successful as a commercial manager, but I knew right from those early days that people development was the stuff that set my soul on fire. So in every role I've ever done, I've always manoeuvred myself to make that a core part of the work that I'm doing. So when I'm asked about that time, I always say my proudest achievement was not going to the Elle Style Awards as one of the top performing store managers, but it was supporting over 40 individuals into and up through various management and leadership positions within the companies that I worked for. Retail has a shelf life. And I'm sure some of that translates to the food industry as well. And after experiencing burnout, I moved into the charity sector. So somebody really took a chance on me at that point in terms of my background and working in community development. But it was a great learning experience. So I was in the charity sector for about 12 years again. And again, a variety of roles. So started off working frontline, one-to-one groups around employability skills, using that experience that I had as an employer to help people that were facing multiple barriers and disadvantage when it came to gaining and sustaining employment. And at that time, I've always been a massive learner. You know this about me, Amy. I love to learn. And so I'd undertaken my first teaching qualification. And so I was writing courses, and I moved into delivering groups that were helping people to get their first certificate. You know, when somebody's had an awful experience at school and they go, oh, I'm really rubbish at learning, you can't teach me anything. But helping them to do those small certificates that built their confidence, that built that self-esteem, that built the belief that they could do the things that they put their mind to. I put forward an idea for a retail training program. The organization that I was in had just opened its first two charity shops, and I saw a real opportunity to bring together my background in retail and that work around supporting people with employability. So around that time, I'd done my assessor and my quality assurance qualification, so really well-rounded in the learning side of things. And I moved over to working with the shop's management teams, and it was quite an aggressive growth strategy. So I think within sort of the first couple of years, we trebled the number of shops that we've got. So supporting those management teams in the skills needed to deliver that training program and helping them to gain their qualifications as assessors to be able to deliver those qualifications. And that kind of manoeuvred me to doing more work with those management teams to help them to understand how to get the best out of their people. I then very quickly found, so by this time I'd done my ILM5 in coaching and mentoring. So I was starting to manoeuvre around doing more of that work, not only in my organisation, but across the sector, and then even wider than that, utilising those coaching skills to support that management and leadership development. I went on and did my ILM Level 7 and became accredited as a senior practitioner with the European Mentoring and Coaching Council. And then in the midst of the pandemic, because, you know, the world's gone mad, what else do you do but decide it's time to go solo? I wanted to take all of that stuff that I'd always been doing behind the scenes. I'd never had the job title or the pay that recognised all of that development work. And I'd seen the real benefit of it. So I wanted to not only do more of that, but start to shout about the difference that that sort of stuff makes. And so now, 2 years into my own business, I set up Learning Partner Solutions in November last year. So it's almost our first birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. So, loving life. Loving what I'm doing. Really tapping into all of those passions.
Yeah. And you can see, Lucy, can't you, why I loved Donna from the start? Because it's a similar story, like a different one. Yours is the retail route. Mine's the manufacturing route. But it's like, I've done lots and lots of different things. The common thread is I love developing people. I love like giving people that leg up and, you know, motivating people. But it was always like the second part of the job. And we've both made it the primary part of our job, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a really great story. So a lot of what you do a lot of stuff around leadership now, don't you? But you do use profiling, or you've done stuff with profiling tools in the past, and you use profiling tools, which is the thing that I always like come to you about, because I'm like, oh, because I don't have necessarily have an accreditation in stuff, and you have. And I've been on one of your DISC profile workshops, and it was flipping amazing. When we get into talking about it, I'll talk about how much it's helped me, because it's really helped me in my business understand myself better. But just for the listeners, just give us a bit of a sort of understanding of what we're talking about when we're talking about personality profiling and how it
can be useful. It's a good question. Yeah, there's loads of tools out there, and I think the awareness of those tools has really grown over the last couple of years. So I'm an accredited DISC practitioner, and I love DISC because it's the methodology that underpins so many of the assessments that people are familiar with. So Discovery Insights, Clarity 4D, Colours, we often hear these things referred to. So it's out there under a number of different brand names. But that methodology is a really powerful one, understanding where we get our energy from, how we display that. There's also things like High Five. So most personality profiles are strengths-based and they're self-reporting. So it's you going through a questionnaire and thinking, is that me? How much is that me? Do I agree with that? What do I think about that? MBTI, so Myers-Briggs is another really, really well-known one. And then Belbin. So I'm just doing my Belbin accreditation, which is all around team roles and understanding the different roles that come naturally to us, that play into our strengths, play into our passions, and think about our behaviour and our interactions. Because behaviour is communication. We're often paying more attention to actions than to words.
We were talking about that yesterday, weren't we? Yeah. We were running a course with an MPD team, and we were talking about, you know, body language and the way you say something versus the words. Like the words are important, but also how, like, we're, as humans, we've got like this sixth sense, like you can tell if somebody's being disingenuous or whatever. So it's really interesting.
And we were talking about how your interaction with somebody else, how that can be perceived by other people watching you as well, which in a team environment is really important, isn't it? And being aware of how you might be perceived.
Yes. Yeah. And it's thinking about all of those aspects. So personality profiles are really useful when we think about the elements of emotional intelligence. How self-aware are we? Right. How aware are we of who we are, how we show up, and the impact that we have on those around us? But how does that change depending on what we think somebody expects of us? How does that change when we're under pressure? So all of these nuances, and when you add different levels of relationship to the mix, that starts to change and shift things as well, right?
So does the bell bin, I haven't heard of that one, is that specifically around team dynamics?
So no, it can be looked at on an individual basis, but it's about, so the language is team roles. And I think this is the crux of where personality profiles are useful. They give people a common language and framework with which to discuss similarities and differences. So Belbin uses the language of team roles. So the research started out to look at the behaviours and interactions that were most valuable in a team being effective. And Dr. Meredith Belbin identified 9 distinct roles that are needed for a team to be effective. Mm-hmm. Well, within those 9 roles, we'll have some that feel really natural to us, that play to our strengths, that play to our preferences. And we'll have others that doesn't mean we can't do them. But to do so, and to do so for a prolonged period of time, will cause us stress because it's not our happy place. Yeah. So if I think about my my last employed role, I was the person in the team that picked up all the detail. The it's called a completer finisher role, the person that's down in the detail and gets things over the line. That's not my preference.
But when you said that, I just thought, oh my God.
But nobody else wanted to do it. And so we're all able to adapt. But it's whether what the cost of that is. And then from the team perspective, it looks at, so because we've all got these different ways of playing in position, how can we utilize that so that we're all at our best and the team achieves its purpose?
And it's so obvious, isn't it? Like the benefits of this type of thing are so obvious when you really think about it, because it's so destructive if there's a group of people trying to all achieve an end goal and nobody's really sure about who's got which strength and who should be. You know, if you can make it really clear and really obvious and sort of lay all the cards out on the table so everybody's aware, then it would make such a difference. And this is why, like, I've had conversations with, because it does tend to be bigger businesses that invest in this type of, you know, the businesses that I've been in where I've done this type of profiling, it's been in bigger businesses. But I've been talking to a startup that I work with, because I think it's so important when a team is going through that growth period at such a delicate point of a business that actually everybody's really clear about how they fit into this team and that, you know, what that person's strengths are, because it just makes life so much easier, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And especially with the growth piece. So where you're bringing new people in, our tendency as humans is to go like for like. Oh, they're like me. Yeah. We're going to work really well together.
Yeah.
But actually, if you have a team full of people who all want to do the same thing, that team's going to fall over at some point.
I definitely saw that in the last business I was in, that used to be like, oh, they're the right fit. You know, they fit the team values. They fit this. And it's like, actually, we need people that aren't going to fit. We need people to disrupt, or we don't need everybody to want the limelight. And, you know, we need the people that are going to do the data bit or whatever. You know, it's you know, recognizing that we just have that, you know, oh, well, I really liked them. So at interview stage, I really liked them. Well, it's not just about liking someone.
Culture add, right? That diversity of thought.
Yes.
adds richness. Like if you're baking a cake and you don't put the sugar in, that's going to make a difference. It's the same with your teams. And I'm a big fan of Tuckman's theory of team development. So this recognition that all teams go through this process of forming, storming, norming, forming. And, and as soon as there's a change within the team, somebody leaves, somebody joins, a role changes, we adjourn and we have to go through that cycle again. And Tuckman identified that one of those phases was most crucial for team success. Any ideas which one it was?
The storming of it.
Yes.
The bit that everybody wants to skip but is the essential bit.
Yes. Because if you can't come together with that diversity of thought and appreciate those different perspectives, you're losing out on so much opportunity to build better, to build stronger, to be more impactful.
I was just going to say, we had a guest on, Simon Allison, who and we always refer back to what he said about not just being in an echo chamber of the same voices. And that's what I always think of when we talk about this kind of thing. Cause it's so true.
And it
can be difficult, when you're a small business or in a small team. It is, as you say, it's so much easier to, match people that you like. Me and Amy are quite similar, but because we know that, it's about awareness, isn't it? Even if it's just having the awareness, we know that we're quite similar, so that means that we know what we're not very good at, so we have to try harder.
we have to have somebody to organize this, is what you're trying to say.
But if you think, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? So in terms of how we are programmed, if we think about the neuroscience of this, our brain wants us to survive. It wants us to be safe. So it wants to know that we're accepted, that we belong, that we're part of the tribe. So it's a really natural bias that we have to go for somebody that we like. But it's thinking about what you miss out on with that.
Yeah. And also the reality is that at work there will be people that you do not like, that you do not gel with. And I was thinking about the book. Have you read this? I bet you have, Donna. Read "Surrounded by Idiots."
Yes,
that's all. It's about the colour profiles basically. But it's like, if you feel like everybody around you is an idiot, it probably just means that they have a different profile to you. And actually, if you stand back and recognize that and think about that, then you realize they're not all idiots, they're just different.
And that's the thing about having a common language and framework to be able to discuss those differences, because rather than it feeling personal, I don't like you, you're this, actually you move into that space of, oh, your energy just comes from a different place to mine. I've got different strengths to you, and any strength overused is a weakness. So that's a really important thing to remember. I'm quite passionate about being clear that personality profiles are not about putting somebody in a box, giving them a label, pigeonholing them as one thing or another. With everything, there are two sides to the coin.
Yeah.
So every strength has an associated weakness.
Yeah.
And any strength dialed up too high is going to become a weakness.
Yeah.
So on my profile, my D scale is my highest volume. And that's great. That means I'm really driven. I'm really decisive. I'm quite straight talking. But you can imagine that if I dial that up too high, we're then in a place of, oh, watch out, Donna's here.
We've had that discussion before, haven't we? Because I'll say to you, oh, I really admire how you can be direct and this, that and the other, and I'm not, I'm much more yellow and like want everybody to like me. And we were talking the other day and you were like, we deliver the same message. You might be direct about it, but I might deliver it in a way that it's received better because I'm thinking about the other person more, so actually I'm just seeing the weakness in me when I see the strength in you. But actually, it's
leaning into that, isn't it? Any team is stronger than the sum of its individual parts because of that collective strength, those collective preferences and tendencies. And actually, when you're aware of them, you can use them, you can lean into them.
Yeah.
You can see things from those different perspectives.
Yeah. I do think there's something about that labeling bit, though, because I remember we did Myers-Briggs in one of my previous roles, and people would just kind of almost use their profile as an excuse. Oh, well, I can't help it. Or, you know, there was a bit of that kind of, oh, well, we're all the extroverts and you're all the introverts, and like kind of putting people in boxes, which in itself isn't great, but also individuals using it as an excuse. Well, I'm introverted, so I'm not going to get involved, or I can't help it. I've got no F in me, so not very people-y.
It's that difference between fixed mindset and growth mindset, isn't it? Humans are dynamic. We're not static. We're always changing. We're always evolving and growing based on our experience and our learning and all of the things that we encounter. So for anybody to say, oh, well, you know, it's just the way I am, you're giving up all of your agency in that. You can do something about it.
That's really true. And like, I haven't done my colours, but I kind of know what I am. And so because I know I haven't got very much blue, for example, I just know that in times of like detail needed, I know I need to give myself a bit more time so I can sort of be a bit kinder to myself and, you know, get myself into the zone. Whereas other things I can do really quickly because it's so much more natural. But I suppose that is a growth mindset rather than I'm never going to do anything again that requires me to have any detail because I'm,
life isn't like that either, is it?
I was thinking I just outsource everything.
that's the other side of it.
That's a solution. That is still a solution, isn't it? It's the awareness, and that's what I think is so valuable and what I love. And I can't understand. Like, I was going to ask you, like, well, okay, this is like, we all love this kind of thing. And I find it really difficult to understand why people wouldn't love this kind of thing. And I don't know whether you know, you probably don't know this, Donna, but I used eHarmony, to find my husband. I mean, I did. I did find my husband.
Fair play to you.
It was much more selective than Tinder, where I found mine. So just,
I found mine on Facebook. So I don't know.
Oh, wow. There you go. But it's because, like, I really value the science behind profiling and, like, the fact that, you know, we are, you know, that it's a tool that we can use. So I struggle to understand why anyone wouldn't use it, as particularly in a business setting, which is obviously a much more commonplace to use it.
I think sometimes it comes from perhaps a poor experience of it being used.
Mm.
So if somebody has been on the receiving end of being told that's who they are,
that
can leave a lasting impression.
Yeah.
Whereas a strong facilitator of any profile uses it as a lens to get curious.
Right? Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
This suggests this. How does that play out for you?
Yeah.
What does that look like in your day to day? And Lucy, where you said about the detail thing. So not only is it about noticing the tasks that aren't going to be your favourite, but also it allows you to plan your work, right? So if you've got a detailed piece of work you need to do, you're looking at the time of day that's best of you to do that. You're giving yourself a different amount of time to do it. So it's not just in the execution. It's also in the planning and thinking about what's going to need to be involved there. And Amy, I love that your answer to having a lower C volume is to outsource. That's such a high volume yellow solution. Like, who's in my network? Who can I bring in to do this with me?
Well, and that, I think that probably segues quite nicely onto my experience of the workshop that I did with you, because absolutely what you're saying there, you kind of took us on a journey. You made us, like, so we did the profiling but didn't get to see it until the day of the so we couldn't sit and ruminate without having a facilitator there, but you explained all the different colors and then got us to kind of guess where we were. So it was all, and then kind of reveal it, because I think it takes people on the journey more, and just that awareness. Because like you say, Lucy, you know, even though you haven't done it, you've got a good idea based on the conversations you hear other people have.
Yeah.
And my blue is zero, like literally zero. But what I found great, and because I've done stuff like, I hadn't done the colours since I graduated, and they had changed. So I had blue, I was a lot more blue-green when I graduated, and I was quite introverted, and I'm not quite so introverted these days. And I found that interesting, you know, 20 years later, it being quite different, because I'm quite yellow, red, bit of green, zero blue. And yellow, like you say, being very gregarious, wanting to talk a lot, wanting everybody to like me. I was like, oh, you know, and this was like early on in my business. So I was like, oh, it turns out that that's the reason I wanted to do a podcast, and and various other things. And what it's really helped me with is A, working out that I need to outsource certain things, but also helped me own the fact that I am that person and I do enjoy standing up and speaking on stage. Like Donna's been great in that, helping me to not feel some sort of shame about that. Like it just, it's sort of so affirming that those are actually my strengths. So it's okay that I want to do those things. I don't have to fit the mold. I just do what's
So it's not that you have zero blur, it's that your blue is below the midline. Well, there are strengths to that, right? You crave variety, you crave change, you want to move at a fast pace. Yeah. Those aren't negative things. They're things that resonate with who you are and how you operate. And I love that you've acknowledged the way things change over time. Because that, going back to that point about us being dynamic, not static. So I originally, and I've done my profile, my DIS profile, three times. So the first time I worked in retail and my D's always been super, super high. But I was sort of D, so red and then yellow were in my profile, but there was quite a difference between the two. When I moved into the charity sector, the yellow actually went up and I dialed back the D a little bit because it was a very different environment and the way that you needed to interact with people. The expectations of how you'd interact with people was different. And then my third one, I'd taken on a role that involved doing quite a lot of quality assurance, being responsible for data protection within our directorate, safeguarding, all these like dot the I's, cross the T things where you had to be in the detail. And lo and behold, what happened to my blue volume? Up it went above the line. Like, so the job that we're doing, what's going on in our lives, the people that we partner with, the people that we spend the most of our time with, all of those things influence how we see the world and how we see ourselves.
No, that's fascinating, actually, how it does. Well, and it totally makes sense. It's what we say, isn't it? You know, you become, it's, I don't know, I can never remember sayings, but there's some of the people that you're around and the situations you're in, and that absolutely rings true in that.
And do you think that's because I've noticed that as well when I've, because like, you know, there's the free, 16 personalities that you can do online.
Yeah.
So I've used that quite a lot, and I used it when I had my business Podology, and I noticed how that changed, like when I was right in the middle of that business. So it was like I was really not entrepreneurial, like really dialed up on that, like extrovert. But now I'm more introverted. And I think that's more natural for me. So it's been interesting for me to see, because the first profile that I did was probably when I was at Bacavor, I think. So, you know, seeing how my profiles changed over my life and feeling and thinking, how did I feel in those moments? Like, what's my most natural, who do I want to be and who am I most happiest being is really interesting.
And crucial for workplace well-being.
Right?
If you're playing outside of your preferences and tendencies for prolonged periods of time, that's going to cause you stress. That's going to make what seems like a fairly simple or straightforward task feel like the biggest mountain you're ever going to climb.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick breather here to hear from our fantastic sponsors. They help keep the podcast going, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This podcast is sponsored by Damer Ingredients, who provide best-in-class functional ingredients such as starches, proteins, fibres and gums, to name but a few, into food manufacturers across the UK and Ireland.
I've worked with Damer on various projects for my own brand and with my clients, and what I love about working with them is their in-depth technical knowledge and their ability to apply that to the specific products that you're actually working on.
So they've become an extension to your own development team, supporting them with their knowledge from concept through to launch. To find out more, visit www.damer.com. Can I just share a moment that some listeners will just, it will resonate with, that when I came back off maternity leave, I kind of took it, I'd been in an insight role and just basically managed people but didn't do any of the do really. And I went back into a role where I had to do the do, and I had to use a system called Dunnhumby that people will know about, which is Tesco club card data. This was about a week in, and I phoned my boss in tears and just said, I've made a mistake. I shouldn't have come back to this, you know, this role. I can't do it. I just don't, you know, I don't have the ability. And, you know, that's a very blue activity that I was trying to do, you know, with the detail and ticking the right boxes and this, that and the other. And it's just, you know, it that really resonates in that for all that time when I worked in sort of category and insight, I loved the presenting and the telling the story and all of that, but I hated the back end of it. And ultimately that's why I stopped doing it, because I didn't want to do that bit anymore.
Yeah.
And I know that there's, because, you know, people that I coach and people that come on my courses, there's a lot of that goes on when you take a step back and you're like, what is it that, when you feel stuck in a job or in your career and it's just not flowing like it used to, there's usually something in that profile, isn't it, that tells you
absolutely
that's the bit of that job.
Yeah Happy people work harder when when you're in that, what's the word you use, in that zone of genius, when it's your happy place, when you're tapping into those things that are truly you, it feels easier. And therefore what your level of effort looks like seems way above other people that are perhaps doing the same role, but through learned behaviour rather than preference or tendency.
That is so, like, that resonates with me, Amy, the week that I've had. You know, I've been I've been having to do something which I do, but it's not my zone of genius.
Yeah.
And
it's telling you that you don't want to do that anymore.
It's been a hard week. And I'm just like, this is not, like, normally I'm in flow and I'm loving it. And even though I'm always busy, like, me and Amy are always busy and always tired, but, like, there's a passion behind it which, like, keeps us firing. And then when you have, like, this moment, you're like, oh my God, like, and you just, oh, it's that horrible feeling.
That's why it's a too blue. The thing that you've been trying to do is too blue.
It's important to know, though, anybody can do any job.
Yeah.
And all just do it differently. So it's not that there are certain tasks that you can't do. You might not choose to do that, but you could. How you'd go about it would look different.
But you do tend to get tendencies, don't you, of certain people going to, because I want to ask you, Donna, if I'm doing a disservice by doing this, but when I talk to teams sometimes, you know, we do a lot with MPD teams who tend to be yellow, green, maybe might have a bit of blue, but a less red. When we're talking about the different departments, I hate stereotyping, because it's not like saying all women are like this and all men are like that. But the reality is commercial salespeople tend to be quite red and quite driven. And people that work in technical tend to be quite blue, and because they need to be, because it's quality and product safety and all of that sort of stuff. So I say it sometimes, and then I'm like, am I just adding to this stereotype, or is that actually true and it's fine to do that?
So I think it's helpful here to go back to what are the axes that this model is based on. So it looks first of all at our our level of extrovert versus introvert. And we thought nobody is any one thing completely. So it's recognizing that we dial up, we dial down. We're somewhere on a spectrum with that. But the other axis is about task focus or relationship focus. And so there, if you think about what's involved in a role where you talk about MPD or sales, there has to be that element of being outgoing, being able to build relationships. If there's not enough task focus, things might be lovely, but nothing ever really gets achieved. If there's only if there's only task focus, there tends to be some upset, some disharmony, some discord, because actually we need to think about all of those things in how we're operating.
Do you know what? That's also brought me back to a conversation we had yesterday as well, Lucy. We were talking with a team and they were talking about how technical people weren't customer facing and should they be and stuff like that. And actually, not all technical people are blue, but what we're saying is if they are more introverted and they are more task focused and not that, you know, good at building relationships, do you really want to put them in front of the customer? So it's that could be quite useful information for that team to help them with their the frustration that they have that they're not getting that support, because actually that support's going to be a hindrance, not a help.
And that's the key, isn't it, right? So what support do I need to be most effective, but also what does my development look like going forward? Where do I need to focus my energy and my attention to be more impactful, to be more effective, to perform better?
Absolutely. So our audience are food industry, so a lot of food manufacturing, retail, and obviously you've got a bit of a retail background. And when we were discussing doing this podcast, I was like, does it relate to like everybody? And you're like, obviously it does, Amy. But, you know, I was thinking, you know, you've got a factory and you've got hundreds of people in that factory or whatever. How does using something like DISC apply in those environments where there's lots and lots of people?
The success of any business is down to its people, right? Whatever that business is doing, however it's working, it's about the people and getting the best out of the people that you've got. And as humans, we're really complicated, right? We don't come with a user manual. So where we talk about a need for explicit expectations, a need for strong communication, the ability to have those important but sometimes challenging conversations, all of that applies no matter how big or small your team is. So that common language and framework for understanding, for awareness, so that people can build strong and effective working relationships, so that there's an understanding and a way of discussing where those behaviours show up and whether they're helpful or unhelpful, what the impact or consequences of those things have been. So if you think about the manufacturing floor and we're looking at a number of people in their hundreds, the behaviour of one can derail that. And so when you think about it in those terms, equipping people with that language, with that vocabulary, with that awareness and understanding allows you to move away from it being assumptions. I think they're like this just because of that. Actually into a place of making it explicit. Let's actually get that out in the open. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the impact that it has. And let's use that language to find a way to make ourselves even better as a team. Because that's the other one, right? Often these things come up when it's thought there's a problem. There doesn't have to be a problem. It's about optimizing. How do you get the best out
protecting,
of the resources?
Isn't it? To make sure that you don't face problems.
And just because you're doing, you know, everything's fine as a team, why can't it be blooming brilliant?
And you're not going to negate all of the problems because life's not that simple. So it's about understanding how we best navigate those problems when they occur. And rather than that being people chuntering in the corridor amongst themselves or somebody blowing up in a meeting or, you know, whatever that might play out like, somebody like refusing to send the data because they need to read another 17 reports before they're happy to draw a conclusion. Actually, when we're talking about those strengths and preferences and understanding the makeup of them, we're a little bit kinder. We're a little bit more understanding about where some of those roadblocks happen and why they might be happening. And it helps us to get to a solution faster.
And it's the empathy and understanding of others, isn't it?
It is.
And, and that people aren't doing it deliberately. You know, like it just is them.
I was thinking again yesterday, like when Amy and I are training, like sometimes we see like sort of a like a light bulb moment of like self-reflection or it's allowing people, giving people the tools to become more self-aware and become more aware of other people. Because and I think we're so passionate about this, Amy, because we've kind of gone through, we've become more self-aware and have got ourselves into better positions because of it and are happier doing jobs that like are more fulfilling. And it's like everybody should be feeling like this.
I think the other thing it does is it so one of the biggest barriers to open and honest conversations is hierarchies. Right, oh, they've got that job title, I can't say that to them. And so one of my favorite activities whenever I run a day based around DISC is the first thing I do is put up a car park flip chart. And I get everybody with a post-it to write their job title on the post-it, and that goes in the car park. For today, we're all here as humans. That's where we start. That's where we finish. And so that level playing field for conversations feels really important. Because when you think of somebody as a human, it's much easier to say those things and find the way to say those things than when you think of somebody as a managing director or, you know, whatever that job title is.
Oh, that's a really good idea. I'll be stealing that one.
You're welcome.
So what other tips and ideas have you got? What would you, you know, for people that are listening, what sort of practical advice would you give them about using personality tools? How, you know, in what way could they be using them? Obviously, they can get you in or us in to do some sort of workshop and do that as a team. But how can they, you know, where should they start? And, you know, how can they be implementing this stuff for themselves and their teams?
So for me, it all starts with curiosity. So if we're thinking about that building awareness, building understanding, we have to start by willing to be curious. We don't know the answer. And if ever we think we do, we're assuming. And to assume is to make an ass out of you and me. So curious questions, things like how does what you're doing allow you to play to your passions and your strengths? Like asking somebody, what is it that lights you up? And letting them talk to you about that so that you have a better understanding. What causes you stress within your role? What are the pinch points for you right now? And actually, what support would you like around that? Because for some people, they'll go, yeah, but I really love it. Like if there wasn't a deadline tomorrow, it wouldn't get done. So just opening up that awareness and that understanding.
So it's actually about being curious and understanding, wanting to understand what people's preferences are. That doesn't even necessarily, you don't even need to use a tool to do that. It's just, it's amazing that we don't just do this automatically, does it? Like so many times when I'm coaching people, and they're like, I just don't understand why they didn't get it. And like, you know, and I was like, have you asked them how they'd like to communicate to them? Oh, no, I hadn't thought of that. And doing that, you know, in a one-to-one situation, I guess, having those, oh, not necessarily, I guess, you could do it as a team.
And even in social time, right? When it's downtime, you know, should we catch up after work or we're doing this particular fundraising activity as part of our CSR? Like, what
or
do you like?
Or you're driving to a retailer. I used to have the best conversations in the car on the A1 driving down to Tesco's.
There's a lot to be said for that. because you're not face to face. Nobody's looking at you. The intensity is taken out of it. So one of my favourite questions is talking to people about how do you prefer to receive feedback? Right, because feedback's one of those touchy topics, isn't
not
it?
Not at all. Only if it's nice.
But actually understanding, do you want a conversation about that? Would you prefer to have something written that we could then follow up and talk about? Do you want it all in one go and straight to the point? Do you want me to kind of soften the blow and check how you're doing first? Are you going to need some time to think about it and digest? Or are you good with an on-the-spot conversation? Like all of those little nuances, I hope you can see just as I'm saying them out loud, how much that level of understanding, joint understanding, enhances a working relationship.
Yeah.
And this stuff isn't just work, right? These are skills for life that we're talking about.
100%. Yeah. We were talking about that yesterday, weren't we? Like all of this stuff that we talk about communication and all of that stuff, it helps you at home.
Yeah.
Like I always talk about the dishwasher, don't I? Like, it's the dishwasher unloaded for me or whatever the thing is. But it's life skills, isn't it?
Yeah. So I have a really high D volume. My husband has a really high S volume, which means I know if I want him to do something new, if I want him to be impulsive, I have to give him 2 days' notice. Right?
That's useful information, isn't it?
So similarly, I know that his head is sometimes spinning because in the space of an hour, I can have changed my mind 3 times. I'm like, I want to do this. No, I want to do this. And he's like, Donna, which one? I'm like, all of them. You know, keep up.
Yeah.
So knowing that about each other, those would be potential pinch points, right? Mm-hmm. They could really easily turn into argument territory.
But they actually become things that you laugh at together.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, you're doing it again. You're doing it again. Oh, so you're not just here to help people sort their work life out. It's actually their whole life.
It's remembering we're a whole person, right? We're all more than just our job title.
Yeah.
We're all more than what we do within our working hours.
Yeah.
So in any of that, and you'll know this as a coach, Amy, we work with the whole person because it's that person that turns up to work.
Exactly. And I don't think we'll go for a relationship advice from any of us when we've just said that on Facebook and Tinder that we met our partners on. This has been such an amazing conversation, Donna. I want to just talk quickly about the benefits of getting an external facilitator in, because I think that's important, because we've talked about, you know, how people can use this themselves. So why would they get somebody like me or you in to facilitate these conversations?
So I think it's about remembering those potential pitfalls. And it is a skill you have to invest in developing to be able to take that coaching approach, to stay in the place of curiosity, to notice where things are, because it's so easy to veer into that. Oh, you're this, or that's because of that. And so helping people to navigate those conversations in a way that they are helpful. And I think a precursor to that is setting the conditions so that everybody feels psychologically safe.
Yeah.
And again, that don't assume that's a given. That takes some work, some setup, some preparation to make sure people are in that space.
Yeah.
I think the skill of really understanding the nuances of a tool. So being really passionate about that personal and professional development, I'd read books about DISC and gone, oh, yeah, this is that and you're that. But it's too easy to latch on to just that surface level information.
Yeah.
Whereas somebody that's gone through that training and that accreditation process has really deep delved into the nuances and how combinations play off each other and exploring those differences not only in work but out of work. So I think when teams try to use some of this stuff just on their own, the focus is about the workplace. And so it can be really easy to forget some of those additional outside elements that are important to consider. So I think what I'm saying in a really long-winded way is an external person coming in will not only have the skills and experience, but they stay in that position of being the outsider.
Yeah.
When you're in it, there's a natural blinker, right? Because you're in it. If you think about when you're in a swimming pool, you look to the side and what you see is the walls of the swimming pool. When you're outside, you can see all around and what's outside of that. And I think keeping that observer perspective is really important in making sure that the use of the tool is productive and helpful.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. So how do people do that with you, Donna? Well, I should say, I'm always really rubbish at doing this, like, you know, oh, and mention things that we're actually doing, but, you know, it is helpful for people to know. So I mentioned that Donna and I have been collaborating in the background quite a bit over the last couple of years, but we want to do more of that in the foreground. How do you even say
that? In the foreground.
So we've been working together on collaborating on things like working on future leader programs, mentoring, so internal mentoring, things around the team dynamics and navigating change, conflict. This is all stuff that Donna's been helping me with over the last couple of years, but she is such a blooming amazing facilitator. We want to do some more stuff together in person.
Yes, please.
And obviously the DISC profiling and now the Belbin is going to really enhance that. So how do people get, obviously people can get in touch with me, but how do people get in touch with you, Donna, if they want to hear more about some of the stuff that you do?
So I currently have my website under construction. So I guess the easiest place is LinkedIn. I'm quite active on there. I don't think there's anybody else with my name, so I think I'm fairly easy to look up.
Yeah, Donna Ward Higgs. Yeah.
That's a really great place to just be able to drop a message as well, and we can arrange a conversation really easily off the back of that.
Fabulous, Donna. Is there anything that we've not talked about that you want our listeners to hear, Donna? Or what would be your sort of key thing you would want people to take away from this episode about profiling?
Don't be scared of them. Mm-hmm. Stay curious in all of your interactions, and invest in this. It's worth the investment. It pays dividends. And certainly the businesses that I've worked with on this, the feedback is always, wow, I can't believe it made that much of a difference. So it's well worth the investment, and you will see a return on that. And you know, you and I are going to work together more. I want to work more with Lucy too. Like, let's
totally
not leave. We need to include that too.
Sorry,
I'm hoping we're going to pair up on some of that as well.
And we've already been, before we started recording, talking about something that we could do the three of us together. Yes. So we're definitely going to do that. Watch this space. Thank you so much, Donna. We've totally overrun on time. We're going to get in so much trouble.
We knew we would.
And I just know that everybody's going to have loved this conversation. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Donna. Pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll see everybody else next time.
See you next time.
Thank you for joining us today, and we hope that this has been useful to you. As ever, we would love it if you could rate and review the podcast on your podcast app. It really does help us reach and support more foodies out there.
We'd also love it if you'd come and join us in the Facebook group, the O for Food's Sake community. And if you want to get in touch with us personally, Lucy is available for consultancy advice and training and can be found on LinkedIn as Lucy Wager.
And if you want to reach out to Amy for any one-to-one coaching, group facilitation or training, then contact her on LinkedIn at Amy Wilkinson Coach. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
See you next time. This podcast is sponsored by Damer Ingredients, who provide best-in-class functional ingredients such as starches, proteins, fibres and gums, to name but a few, into food manufacturers across the UK and Ireland.
I've worked with Damer on various projects for my own brand and with my clients. And what I love about working with them is their in-depth technical knowledge and their ability to apply that to the specific products that you're actually working on.
So they've become an extension to your own development team, supporting them with their knowledge from concept through to launch. To find out more, visit www.damer.com.